All right. So I do have a fact I just confirmed a few minutes ago. I have an appointment scheduled with my friend that's the successful doctor and entrepreneur to get his input and thoughts on an invitation to joining a mastermind group and some other people, and then get his input on. And also, it's timely, I think, too, because I just got the postcard in the mail for he's the one that started the school. He and his wife started Faith Academy, where our son goes to school. So I just got the postcard in the mail the other day for their annual fundraiser coming up next month. So it's probably timely too. So thank you. Awesome. So I saw him at church on Sunday and said, hey, do you have a few minutes one day this week? We get together, get your input on a few things. And he said, yeah, sure. No problem. So that's good news.
Good news.
Mm-hmm. And I get his feedback and input, on that. I did want your input on something else. I have some ideas, but I always like to get another person's viewpoint.
Sure.
So it always kind of I'm making a comment first. It always kind of stinks when you onboard new clients, you know, and then you go right into a bear market, you know, the first year. It's always kind of tough, you know, especially if they haven't had an advisor before. So this corporate executive client of mine, we also go to church with them too. Super nice, good relationship. Obviously he's been a little disappointed with the results. You know, this year, I think he told me his wife commented that, we paid this guy. It doesn't look like we're doing so great. I said, well, you kind of have to keep things in perspective. You know, his own company stock is down 38% year to date, you know, where the markets are. And we're down significantly less than that. Let's say like maybe 16% or 18%, something like that. So anyway.
What's his company?
I just had that up. Cevia, CEVA, Inc. So anyway, you know, we've been through, you know, we charged them the financial planning fee last year. We've been doing the 12-4-2, you know, been giving them great service. Obviously, you know, we've talked about things along the way. And we sent him, it's time to do his financial plan update, which, you know, we bill that once a year. Right? We charge the advisory piece quarterly, but the financial plan just once a year. And so we sent a thing saying, hey, we need this update information. We're working on your financial plan. And he had called Cynthia the other day and said, hey, I just need to schedule a quick few minutes with Preston. You know, he replied to that email. I'm like, oh yeah, I know what this is about because we have a scheduled meeting on Friday of this week. And so he's like, hey, we've been thinking about this anyway. And you know, so it's 10,000 for the financial planning fee. Yep. And then it's this. And he said, you know, with the, you know, kind of the, where we are your day stuff, I don't see paying another $10,000 for that. And of course, I didn't really get that much back with his comments. You know, I didn't really get that much value out of that anyway. And I don't see a need to charge their fee. And I said, well, it's not really like either or. We don't really have like an a la carte menu. You know, I told you our minimum planning fee is 20,000. And how we collect that 20,000 is an annual planning fee charged once a year plus our advisory fees. And so, you know, you've only paid us about 7,000 in advisory fees for the year. So we kind of talked through it and I said, you know, with that, you get 12-4-2 service, rapid response, blah, 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 you know, the whole thing. And so I said, you know, what are you asking me or what do you think is fair? And so he said, well, I don't want to be treated different than anybody else. So I guess we'll just chalk that up to, you know, maybe my misunderstanding or we'll just see how this next year. Cause I said, look, this has been probably the most challenging year in the markets, you know, since the 1970s. Most time, you know, when bonds are up and you know, stocks are down or vice versa, and there's just been nowhere to go this year unless you were all in energy, you know, which would have not been worth the risk. Right. So he said, okay, that was on whatever day last week. And then he called the office and asked Cynthia to please send him the financial planning agreement on Friday afternoon, which she did. And I proactively told her, why don't you put a proactive call on my calendar on Monday afternoon for me to just touch base with him and follow up and make sure, you know, see if he has any questions. Well, then he sent an email this morning saying, hey, could you schedule a quick few minutes on Preston's calendar this afternoon at 4 Tuesday morning? I have some questions or something. So I was prepared to do something for him on Friday, you know, just because, you know, I understand it's been a tough year and also it's the first year. But he didn't ask me to, but so I'm curious your thoughts. If you were me, I have a couple of ideas how this phone conversation might go, but you never know until you get on the conversation.
Well, one of the things to do with all your clients is make sure they understand, you know, the market as a way of investing to hedge inflation over time.
Right.
I mean, it's very difficult for people that don't know the history of the stock market to realize that it's a process. It's getting into the river and staying in the river that makes your life easier as when you retire.
Sure.
So I went back and looked at, I think BlackRock did a study in the 70s of the 70s. So just look at Google, what would an investment, you know, what would $10,000 invested in 1972, 3, 4, 5 return in today's dollars, you know, adjusted and then adjusted for inflation. And what, I mean, inflation takes a big bite and they're assuming reinvesting dividends. But I thought I did really well with a mutual fund because I invested money in it in 1973, I think. And it was worth, you know, let's say $10,000 was worth a little over $1 million. And now, but I looked at the S&P 500 and the S&P 500, returned about $1,200,000 investing in 1973. And it was around $800,000 in real terms. But if you invested in 1975, the return was $1,500,000. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So the key is dollar cost averaging. And then they do something dollar cost averaging over 24 months and they showed how much better that did during that period. But had you invested the whole thing in the beginning of 1975, you would have $1,500,000 instead of $1,200,000. So, part of it is reinvesting dividends and part of it is staying in the market and giving yourself time. And I think that was almost a 12% return. The other was around 10% return and the, $1 million was like a 7% return. So either way, you know, fees aren't going to get in the way of that as long as you keep investing and you invest enough money. So the key is dollar cost averaging.
Yeah, I understand that. I agree with that. Reminding our clients about that, I think, is key and important. So I was talking with my wife about earlier, you know, like her input. Like, I figure the conversation afternoon is going to go one of three ways, right? He's either going to say, look, I talked about my wife. You know, this just hasn't worked out for us. Thanks. Have a nice life. We'll see you at church on Sunday. But, you know, I don't think we want to be with you anymore. So I could just say, okay, well, I'm sorry you're disappointed. Wish you the best. Da, da, da. I feel like the other thing I can do is say, look, you know, your relationship is way more important to me than any amount of money, right? And so I certainly understand it's been a difficult year. We can't control the markets, but I understand you're disappointed and we want to help, right? So how about we discount I would be willing to discount my financial planning fee 50% this one year, but I can't do that every year, but because, you know, I want to help and I value a relationship, I'd be willing to do that. You think that's wise?
I think that shows an understanding of the sensitivity of people are to the overall environment that they're living in.
Because I think the issue is not the relationship. I think the issue is money. I think it's just purely a money issue.
Yeah, and I mean, look, you know, it doesn't sound like they have a money issue in terms of reaching their goals or having enough money. It's accumulation of wealth. And, you know, the less fees you have to pay, the more you accumulate wealth. Let's face it. But the key is to keep them in the market and not, you know, decide to put the whole thing in CDs or something.
Sure.
So.
The other question I was going to ask, of course, it's only the second time it's come up, and I think the other people that I did, they fired themselves. I feel like I do a good job of explaining to clients when they onboard, this is our minimum fee. We charge that fee in one of three ways. Sometimes I go within the third way, sometimes don't. If you're a corporate executive or you're a business owner and all your net worth is in your business, we're going to charge a $10,000 annual planning fee plus a monthly coaching fee, right? And the coaching fee, we're going to benchmark that and kind of see how your business is doing and growing, but we're not going to reevaluate your business every year because that would be onerous on you and us. That's how we should do it, and just charge you a percentage. It was too onerous. So we're just going to charge you a flat monthly fee for business coaching until you get to a level where your assets would equal $20,000 in fees, right? They're cool with that. And then financial planning fees. I feel like I do a good job explaining. Look, we collect minimums $20,000 a year. That's a combination of an annual planning fee of $10,000 a year plus advisory fees that are billed quarterly. Like in those previous clients that fired themselves, they're like, well, we don't want you to manage our money anymore, but we like the planning stuff. We still want to pay you, you know, to do the planning. And I was like, well, it doesn't really work that way, you know. And then this guy saying, oh, well, yeah, I don't really want to pay for that. Any thoughts?
Well, one of the ways to do it is to show them the amount of money that you've saved them by doing financial planning.
Right.
In combination with, I had about six different ways that we save clients money. And one of the things that I would remind them on every other call, it's 12-4-2, then it's, if you have six things, you can introduce it every other time. I would introduce those ideas on a regular basis and remind them of how I was able to save them money. Okay? And that, I think, makes sense, right? So if by financial planning, we're actually being their advocate and saving them money, then it makes sense. Or we're making them money. Somehow we're by doing financial planning, we're aiding in the process, either making more or saving more money. If we're not, then the financial planning is a waste of time.
Okay.
Okay. So by, you know, keeping them in the market, that's worth something. You know, all kinds of different ways you can save people money. And we can go through those if you want to do a little brainstorming, but you get the idea, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So that's another thing I would do because people want to know, okay, what am I actually getting for this? Right. How are you save me money?
Okay. Yeah. Our call on Friday, I thought it ended well, but he obviously still had some more questions, but, I said, look, you know, the fact of the matter is we didn't put all of your money in one company. So you're not down 80% like, you know, Peloton or like, you're not down 90% like PayPal and you're not down, you know, 50% like, you know, a lot of other companies. And you're not down, you know, 40% like a lot of things or even your company stock. And he's like, well, you only talk about the negative. Well, if you'd have been invested in the Dow, my return would have been better. And I said, well, yeah, if I'd invest all your money in ExxonMobil, I'd be a genius, but I wouldn't take that much risk with your money. That wouldn't be prudent because it could have gone down 50% in that same time, just like it did in 2020. And so, you know, if we saved you 10%, 20%, what does that mean to you?
Right. If we had invested all in oil, we'd be up for the year, probably 40%, but we would have spent, we would have spent 10 years not making you any money.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it went down for 10 years.
Yeah, it was flat for 10 years. Look at oil. Oil as a hedge against inflation is bad. It hasn't done anything.
That's true.
At $70, it's not, I mean, compared to where it was in the 70s, it's basically hasn't made anybody any money. I mean, you did fine if you reinvested dividends and things like that, but if you didn't do that, you got screwed.
Yes. Hey, by the way, you had sent me a text early one Saturday morning, so you're up awfully early. And then I called you back, but I never heard back from you. Did you get the answer you were looking for?
No, it was just one of those random things that I wanted you to give me kind of a ballpark figure on.
The way that we do 1242, it's probably, you know, per client, it's probably 40 to 60 hours if you figure everybody's time and energy and preparation and everything else.
Wow.
Because look, okay, 12. So, I mean, here's some quick math. So 12 phone calls means it's going to average at least an hour because you got the phone call and you got the wrap up meeting and that takes some time. My wrap up notes are much more detailed than yours, right? I mean, the video is a great idea, and I could do that. I could just record and then send the recording, but I do more summary and then I have action items for the client, for each one of my staff members, et cetera. And then also before that meeting, someone's got to schedule all the meetings for the year. Then every client gets an email reminder prior to the meeting, right? Someone's got to be in charge of that. Every client gets a phone call reminder the day before the meeting. Someone's got to make that phone call. Then every client gets a follow-up thank you card after the 4 in-person meetings. Plus, there's all the work with the financial plan, right? Not only is that time, because, you know, that's probably figure on average, that's probably, so I think your question was like, how much for a new financial plan? Obviously there's more work in a new financial plan than updating, but it depends on the client's complexity and situation. The more money they have, the more entities they have, the more complex it is. So, you know, I would say, you know, it can be anywhere from 5 to 20 hours for a new financial plan of financial planning. And that's just the financial planners. Plus I've got to sort of design the, you know, the plan, right? And then say, okay, go do this, this, and this. This is what we're going to accomplish. So I've got to spend time on that. And then of course, in addition to that, then you've got regular updates and there's a lot of stuff that has to be done between each 1242 call. So, for example, if I assign the client, do this before our next meeting, then Cynthia follows up and says like, hey, and that can be a combination of emails and phone calls. So I think, you know, and then in-person meetings just take longer. It's just hard to get, you know, let's say that you're able to keep the in-person meeting. It would be ideal if you keep the in-person meeting to 40 minutes. And then do 20 minutes to wrap up. It's rare that that happens for me. So if we do 2 in-person meetings a year, let's say those meetings take an hour and then I've got to spend another 20, 30 minutes on a wrap up. That's 3 hours. So, I mean, you figure all the time and energy goes into it to do it right. Probably that.
So you need to do, this is your answer to your guy.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You need to show them what it's costing you on a per hour basis. Wow. Cause he has no idea, just like I'm in the business, I'm teaching you and I had it somewhere between 6 and 10 hours originally, and then I doubled it and made it 20 hours. Now you're doubling it again and making it 40 hours.
At least. And the fact of the matter is the more money and the more complex someone has, the more time it is because that's a lot more detailed work. There's a lot of other calls. I mean, like, for example, the new Apple executive that we just onboarded, right? So we did the 90-day free look, right, which went really well, and then we onboarded, and we're in the – process of financial plan, but there's a lot of stuff. Like I was having a conversation, you know, with my team today about her Apple stock that we transferred in and allocating the cost basis and which shares have the lowest basis. Because the other thing you hadn't calculated in that, which may make it more than 60 is, you know, in between all those meetings too, we lead and coordinate the team. So we're having to talk to their CPA. We're having to talk to their attorney. We're having to talk to other professionals. And there's other meetings we have with their professionals about this is something we need to do. That's what we need to do. We have meetings and phone calls and emails as our professionals. It's a lot. I mean, in my opinion, to do it right, it's at least that. If it was just as simple as 20 minutes phone calls and 40 minute, you know, phone reviews and, you know, 40 minute in-person reviews and an automated email that my staff sent as a wrap up with a, you know, recording of the meeting, maybe I could shorten the time, but there's more to it than that.
So how many clients can you handle?
Well, I mean, I've still got my goal at 70, so we'll see. 70. Yeah, I mean, you know, the key is you have to have enough team members to do it all. That's the key.
It'd be not your time, but it's still your team time.
Right. So I think 70 is doable if you have the right kind of clients and you get things, you get the right team members, the right systemizations. It's just, it's a lot. Hey, look, if this job was easy, everybody would do it, right? And it wouldn't pay so good. That's why I have to remind myself, like, it's been a stressful year, you know, it's been a challenging year. And, you know, it's interesting, even like this guy on the phone, I know the issue with him is money and he's nervous about his money. His company stock's gone down and stuff. And so I'm sure that's the issue is the money. It's not the relationship, because if it's a relationship, he'd say, look, I don't really care for this. It's not work. He likes the 12-4-2. He likes the meeting. It's just, you know, he's concerned. And so I need to address that and let him know that I understand that. But it's also frustrating that sometimes people want to narrow you down to returns, you know.
No, I understand that. But I think if you can explain what it costs you on an hourly basis to work with your average client, that you're not being paid $1,000 an hour, $5,000 an hour, or whatever, then I think that it becomes much more reasonable when they understand the amount of work that's going into it.
Okay.
And the amount of money you save for him is one thing. That's really important. But the amount of money to give proper advice, people just don't want to be screwed.
That's right.
If you're putting in the time and the effort and your team is, then they don't mind paying for it, but they just don't want to get screwed.
Sure.
And I'd almost tell them that, look, you're not like any different than anybody else. People just don't want to be taken advantage of. And here's why I'm not doing that.
Hey, on the Supernova site, I guess with just the same 24 topics that we did the last 24 months, but I didn't see it said like click here for a new set of topics. When you click here, it loops back to the same thing.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah. So I don't know if you can update that, and I don't know if you can have one of your team members maybe send me some topics, but I might. So I've only communicated with my clients. By the way, Patrick had shared with me a really cool thing that he does, is he actually sends out a communication like chart, one pager to his clients, and he shared it with me. I said, ooh, I really like that. Could you share me a copy of that? And he said, yeah. So we implemented that, and we're sending it out for 2023. It's really cool. It's like a one pager. It's got these boxes. And so it says, you know, here's all your meetings for the year and here's what we're going to be talking about at each meeting. And it's even a little more detailed than this, which is pretty cool. So thanks for the introduction. Yeah.
You like that. What else does it have?
That's pretty much, I mean, it's pretty simple. It's just a one pager that says, you know, Roseland Financial Group 2022 or 2023 communication schedule. Do you want to see it? You want to see it?
Yeah.
Hey, could you tell me where in the shared drive one of those communication schedules is for 2023? Hmm?
spreadsheet call or a folder called client meeting. And then 2023. But I haven't corrected.
That's okay. I just wanted to see sample one. Do you have the PDF one? That's what I was asking. Not the actual spreadsheet, but like the printed out version that you showed me.
No, I mean, it's printable. If you open the spreadsheet, I've got it set so it'll print.
Okay. No problem. Thank you for your help. Appreciate you. Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Does he cover the calendar driven items or is it all financial planning items?
Can you see my screen?
Yeah.
So we customized it, you know, for what we wanted. We took he just had like a one page piece of paper and PDF or something. And so I just put it in a spreadsheet and then you can print in a document, but you can see I put full year outlook.
Yeah.
So anyway, I like it. I think it's another value add, deliverable.
And you don't feel like markets or anything else is going to keep you from delivering this. That you can stick to the schedule pretty well.
Well, you know what I've discovered more recently? Or maybe rediscovered? Can you see that okay or let me stop sharing?
No, I can see it. Yeah.
So I think what I've rediscovered this year is because it's been such a, you know, there's been times where we've had to talk about the markets and stuff. But because I moved to the other field. Now you can't see it. Because of that, I've been sticking more to the communication schedule and
yeah,
less about the markets. And it's actually been helping me, quite frankly. It kind of made me realize not to make that mistake when we get back in to positive territory. Not to be talking about, hey, your account's up 15% year to date, your account's up 12%. It's just to say like, I've been talking about, hey, you got 40% in equities and you got 50% in bonds and 10% in cash and you've got good, you're positioned well for where we are. And I haven't even been talking about returns. And then I've been focusing more on the plan. Your financial plan shows that you're good through age, you know, 100 and you've got a, you know, 92% or whatever their percentage is, probability of success. And so I've been trying to focus. I mean, I've had several financial plan. I've had several, you know, in-person reviews where I never even, the client didn't ask what the return was and I never volunteered it. We just talked about their financial plan.
Yep.
Your financial plan update. Your plan says you're successful. Here's some things, you know, to address. They were like, great, wonderful. I've got a demo client that last time we did a review, I showed him where it is, said, look, you're good through age, you know, 100. If all goes well, you have about twice what you have today. This is how much you can spend. This is the most you can spend. This is how much you're spending now. You got a good cushion. You're knocking around money. He's like, great. That's what I need to know. That's what I got you for. So it's just been a reminder that, you know, not to get sucked into that when markets are doing better, to focus on returns. Focus on allocation, focus on risk, talk about their plan.
Right.
So it's been good. My doctor client, the dental client, dropped off a little note. This is the only thing. I mean, I'm glad to take on his client. It's pretty good. He has a right to ask, but you know, I have such a hard time. I'm going to do yourself first. When we originally took on the relationship, I did not want him to manage his own money. I wanted like all or nothing. Like either you're moving everything to me or we're not working together. But he said, look, he explained why he wanted to keep his account. He said it was, you know, he's got starting to have some memory issues and it keeps his mind active and it's fun. You know, but he dropped off a little note, you know, hey, thanks for having done this year or, you know, something, da, da, da. Thanks for the card, Christmas card. You know, by the way, I meant to give this to you Bible study today, but take a look at this and we can talk about it for the holidays. But he's basically charted out like, here's where he is year to date on his returns on the stuff he's managing. And then here's where the S&P 500 is. And then here's where you are, you know. And it's just kind of like.
That's okay. He's just playing a game with you.
Yeah.
Let him have his game.
Okay.
Don't be upset by it.
Yeah.
We're doing two completely different things. You could be short the market. You can do anything you want.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good point.
I'm serious. He can go, he can use options. He can short the market. He can go long SARC, you know, which is short the ARC fund. He can do all kinds of crap that you're never going to do because it's too much risk.
That's a good point. Yeah. I think the other thing that I've learned this year too is to, it's, you know, you, unfortunately in life, you learn the most, through stretching, and you know, that's when you really learn is right. It's not when you're sitting up on the mountaintop. I mean, that's a beautiful view, right? It's like when you're climbing up the mountain, you're like, I don't know if I can make it to the top, right? You know, it's like, you know,
why did I ever agree to doing this?
Yeah. So, you know, you learn the most in the valleys, but it's, you know, you want to have as many peaks as possible, right? You get to enjoy a little bit of success, but then, you know, after every peak, there's another valley that's coming, right? And so, you know, every bear market's different. I think this one is more indicative of like what it was in 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003, because like literally I put like fixed annuities in clients' accounts where the interest would compound back then because I wanted to have at least one thing on their statement that would go up every month because every other thing in their portfolio went down every single month for like 30 months in a row, like boom, boom. It was just like Chinese water torture, you know? And I think this has been, for me, this has been very similar to that. It's, you know, for the, like, it didn't feel this rough in 2020, you know, like clients didn't seem to be this upset in 2020 and it was much more significant, but it was faster. It's faster down, but it's faster recovery, but it's the, and the challenge is, I think we got some rope ahead of us. I mean, I think the next 12 months are going to be really challenging. You know, the feds are going to continue to raise interest rates, right? We're going to continue to have inflation. Economy's going to slow down more, right? Equities are likely going to correct more because they're based on return. They're based on profit. And so, you know, it's liable to be another oh no year next year, and double digit negative rate of returns are tough. You know, it's brutal, but.
Yeah, that's why I went back to 73, 74. Now that we're completely different. All the technology is new. Everything's changed. But the amount of time it took to work through that is, I think, similar.
I do too. I think it's likely to be a 73, 74. And even Patrick said, those were really brutal years. He said, man, that seemed like, he said, then after 75, things kind of got rolling. It's been going pretty good ever since.
Right.
Which is a little bit of a overstatement, but still.
But, you know, if the problem is that the government, the federal government has been stimulative through this whole period.
Right.
And including the Inflation Reduction Act, which is the opposite.
Yeah, they might as well say we're going to spend some more money and create some more inflation. So we're going to have more problems.
So they just threw another stimulant in and the Fed's the only one with a head on its shoulders going, this is crazy, guys. You can't do this. We're going to have runaway inflation. Meanwhile, they're spending like they're drunken sailors, both parties.
Yep.
So that's the problem. You know, if the government was saying, okay, we're going to cut back, we're going to freeze all government salaries, we're going to cut back, we're going to reduce all these. But no, they're giving the Teamsters $32 billion to bail out their retirement plan because they couldn't manage it properly. When the hell did that ever happen? And they got another $88 billion they're going to give. To union retirement plans because their union roles are down and they refuse to change the 54-year retirement age and extend it or do anything to balance their budget. Then the government comes along. They don't bail us out. They're bailing them out. And that's your problem right now. Our problem.
Mm-hmm.
And why this is going to take 2 years to get over instead of 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
what. I'm curious. You know, you've got to be honest and forthcoming clients let know how you get some stuff, but what is your recommendation on how you got to be, you don't want to be Debbie Downer all the time every month, like, hey, you know, but at the same time, you don't want to be, you know, optimistic either. optimistic, but like, hey, we're going to get through this. Curious, since you lived through 73 and 4?
The answer is from your point of view, you got to be investing all the time.
Yeah.
I know that sounds crazy, but you can't, it's very hard for you to time the market because as soon as.
That's a no-brainer for someone that's a corporate executive. That's a little more difficult for someone that's retired today.
Yes. For people that are retired, it's tough. They've got to keep some cash. They've got to keep a couple of years of cash in order to protect themselves. Mm-hmm. And so you just have to tell them your returns are going to be disappointing, even if we have a market recovery, because we've kept enough cash to prevent you from having a serious problem. And the cash is not going to generate enough return for you. I think, you know, we may get a period where, you know, investing in long bonds may pay off now as the economy slows and those long bonds are, you know, if you can get an 8% or you can get a 4% tax free, those are probably going to be okay. And bonds will finally act like they're supposed to. But up till now, they have been the opposite. So.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, I got an older client that's 93 and, you know, we've got the majority of her portfolio in tax-free bonds. And, you know, earlier in the year, she's wanting to cash out. It's like it's going down every month. I was like, yeah, but the bonds aren't going anywhere, you know.
Right.
Just hold on. Be patient. We got enough money in cash. We got cash flow. But the planning helped me there, too. I did a financial plan. I said, look, if you have a long-term care health event and we put us in cash, you could run out, you know. Or you could certainly maybe not run out of money during your lifetime, but you'll leave a whole rest to your kids. And right. So if we – keep invested and you have an event, you got enough cash flow, still the same amount to the boys. Okay. It's challenging.
It is. This is a challenging time and it's kind of water torture. You know, it's boiling the frog in water. The frog yes. doesn't know it's getting boiled and it just dies.
Yes.
Okay. And that's what's happening to us. It's not going down enough to make you panic, but it, going down every day. And that's the way it was in the 70s. It would just go down. In those days, it would go down 10 points a day. And today it goes down 100 a day. And you say, well, that's not that much percentage-wise. But it adds up.
Percentages, yeah. 100 here, 100 there, 300 there.
Right.
1,000 there. It adds
and,
up.
And you don't panic on any one of them, but you're like, why didn't I sell XYZ Microsoft or whatever when I had, you know, Apple at 156 or 146 or 136 or.
By the way, I did talk to the people at the exchange fund for shares.
Yes.
And unfortunately, well, a couple of things I didn't know. One, you have to have at least a $5 million liquid net worth to do that. And then two, they're not accepting Apple stock at this time. They're loaded up because, you know, they got to stay diversified. They don't end up with 90% of portfolio in Apple stock. So, but it's a good strategy to know about. It's good to talk about and it's good to tell people. I am thinking about partnering with this other firm to help me do a collar strategy on her Apple. And she likes that. We talked about that. She likes that concept and that idea. I've also already gotten an introduction to another friend of theirs. Who's successful, then it's on the calendar for January the 11th. So that's really good news as well.
That's really good.
Already gave me an introduction. So that's good news.
That's smart. Good job. I think you're doing everything you could. I think if, when you explain to people what's the cost of business, what's the cost of maintaining this relationship and the amount of work that we put into it, I think that will help them to understand the value of what you're doing.
Okay.
That you're not just charging for something that's of no value to them.
Right.
That's what they feel like. Okay, I'm paying another 10 grand. I already did a financial plan. What more can he do? He's not making money. He's not creating gold out of whole cloth here. What can that do for me? And you could, you know, I know this sounds crazy, but you could also always say, look, you know, I'm going in your case, since you may not want to do this. You may simply say, you know what? In your case, I'm going to suspend I'm not going to do a financial plan for you this year. We're going to suspend the effort for a year since we really nothing's changed and, let it go. That would be a little dramatic, but.
I mean, that would really be a pay cut for me because that would get us down to about 7,000 a year, which is even below my absolute minimum. But I mean, Again, I think one of the things that's helpful is kind of talking about it. I talked to Shelley about it. You kind of talking about focusing on the long term. Like, look, you know, the relationship's the most important thing. I like them. They like me. They're really nice people. You know, they have the ability to introduce or to refer other people to us. You know, they're in their mid to late 50s, right? And so they have the potential to be clients for the next 20, you know, for the rest of my career, potentially 20, 30 years. And so, you know, while it's not fun, especially at Christmas time, at the end of the year to, you know, eat 10, 5 grand or 10 or it is, you know, the fact of the matter is, look at the big picture. How much are they potentially going to pay us over a lifetime, right?
Yeah. So I would explain your cost, and at the same time, I'd suggest, you know, meet them halfway and say, look, I really don't want to suspend doing financial planning because that's what we do. I mean, that's what we're thinking about all the time with you. Mm-hmm. And it's part and parcel of what we do. So I can't really suspend it completely, but I can give you a discount based on the fact that, you know, this has been a tough year for everybody. So I think the 40 hours is throwing me for a loop here.
I mean, just do the math.
And it's not 1242, by the way.
Right. That's true.
It's 40.
Yeah, that's right. 40 to 60. I mean, if they got a significant, like this new business client they're onboarding, you know, that's got a $7 million net worth, it's probably going to be a good, I mean, she hasn't paid me a dollar yet and we've probably spent 30 plus hours, you know, so far, maybe more, you know, trying to get all the documents, analyze the documents, scan the doc. Cause that's the other thing. Most people, you know, some people just bring you the paperwork and you got to scan it all, right? But even if they give it to you in a PDF form, somebody's got to enter all the data. The cheapest I can get that done is $50 an hour, right? And then half the time when we do that, 3E Money, I've got to have some go back and massage the numbers because they missed something or didn't enter something correctly. And that's probably, you know, somewhere between $50 to $100 an hour. And so then I got to pay the planner for all the work and analyze the data. Then I've got to meet with the planner. I have a pair of planner works for us. I got to meet them several times, go over several times, and we've got to print it. To do it, I mean, I think to do this business right, it's a lot of work, right? To not just, you know, manage the money and keep adding to the pool and let you know if we have a 10% return or not or whatever. It's a lot of work, but it's good work.
Yeah, it is.
And I prefer to have those kind of relationships because I think, it's my opinion, those are a lot stickier relationships.
Right.
I mean, like the Apple client, you know, we're talking about that. I called received. Oh, another valuable lesson I learned since we talked last. And I made this immediate adjustment is from now on, when we onboard a client, I'm going to call the CPA first thing. I'm calling the CPA like day one. Like when they sign the financial planning documents and the advisory, before you get the ACAT, I'm calling the CPA. Like, schedule a meeting with their CPA, right? The last two CPAs have both said, thank you for the communication. I really appreciate you reaching out because, hey, we just started working with your client. Here's some things I have some questions about. You know, here's some things I want to get your input on. Here's some things I'm thinking about. And I want to see if it made sense for them from your perspective, from a tax perspective, maybe any gains that we need to realize for them here or losses, any strategies you need to work on. What do you think about tax freeze for them or, you know, whatever the situation. And both CPAs have just said, well, I just want to thank you so much for the proactive communication. And then the other CPA, I pointed something out. I told him I'd check with the client, circle back to him. I guess he got a little nervous. And he called the client before I got a chance to go, not like, you know, just not used to our model yet. And the client told me, well, he said, I know we just started working with him, but let me tell you, when he called me, he asked all the right questions. And that CPA had said, well, I'm normally the last to know on these kind of things. Yeah. Cause there was something I brought and he said, well, this is the way I have it. And I said, well, that's not the way I understand it. And he goes, well, I'm normally, and then we're talking about they've done a Roth conversion. And I said, I don't know who suggested that. And he's like, I've never been, they're in the 35% tax bracket. I don't know why the advisor recommended they do a Roth conversion every year. And I said, well, I can tell you one thing. I would never recommend to that someone that's in a 35% bracket. That makes absolutely no sense. He goes, well, I'm normally the last to know on these kind of things. So I learned a valuable lesson that reaching out to them early has really helped me.
That's a great idea.
Because it sets me apart from all the other advisors.
Yeah, it's a, by the way, it's just a, it's a, by the way, last person to know, right?
Right. And it's letting, it's establishing early, I'm not going to be like all the other advisors you work with, or I'm not going to be like the previous advisor for this client that you work with. I'm going to be different, and here's how we're going to be different, and here's how we're going to communicate early and often, and we want your feedback. We're going to ask for your input, and we value you in our relationship. And they're like, wow, that's good. I like it.
Yeah, and then you, those guys can eventually, when you get them, you know, you, let's say you run into the next client, and they've got the same CPA.
Right.
Now you've got a relationship, and now he knows who you are, and you'll be like, oh, great, yeah, I know him. I know Preston. He's great. He'll be on top of things for you.
Yes. So that's helpful. All right. So what are some, by the way,
the other concept is this concierge position concept.
Right.
When you're explaining to people what you do.
Sure.
You know, I'm different. Some people want to fly privately. They want a concierge position. They want a concierge travel agent. There are perks to having us. There's value in having us, but it's not for everybody.
Well, when I said, I've used this term several times and it resonates certainly with business owners, the new client they were onboarding that you helped me with, we're not getting the Schwab assets now, but hopefully we will. I said, it was one thing I was going to talk to you about in the last part of our time together. You and I did talk about this a little bit, but anyway, I said, well, we need to, I didn't have the letter of authorization for this other Schwab advisor, and we need to probably have an introductory call to let him know, you know, we're going to be working together. Cause she asked me, you know, want you guys to collaborate. But then she said, well, we probably need to have him shift some things because this one thing you told me you want to do in case we have a market event, you'll know you will be protected there. And she said, well, I thought you were just going to kind of manage the money independent of that. They were going to kind of manage it independently. And I said, well, we can do that, but that's not in your best interest. And he needs to know that I'm your personal CFO. And she goes, I like that term for you. That's really good. I like that. Yeah, my personal. I said, look, when you're managing KFCs, you got 100 stores. If I'm the CFO, I got to know what's going on in all stores. We may have a manager at the other store, but I got to be like, here's what's going on. Here's the plan. We don't want them doing something we don't know about. And she goes, okay. But the thing I always run into in those situations, or I'm always concerned about too, is, you know, then it ends up being a performance issue. Okay. So
no question.
And so this time next year, the reason I hate that is you get pigeonholed because, okay, if I hold all the bonds and they do all the equities, and this time next year, Bob, I'm going to look like a hero, and you're going to say, yeah, they suck. Let's move that over here. On the other hand, if bonds suck over the next 12 months and we get a rally and they've got 70% equities, and she goes, well, they did, you know, 22% and you only did 6, or you did, I hate that, you know? So I'm curious.
You show them the total return.
What?
You claim the total return.
Oh, I like that. And one of the things that she appreciates about me, which I wanted to establish myself different, which is why I'm getting the Merrill account and all the other stuff, right, is one, because of the planning. But two, the Merrill advisor wouldn't work with the other Schwab advisor. Like, they wouldn't communicate. And also, I told her, look, the reason you want us communicating is I need to build time. Hey, we're going to own XYZ. Don't buy the XYZ in her account over there.
Right. Right. That's why you have a total return. You got to look at it as one portfolio.
And that's what I told her. I said, I realize that you have some over there, but I'm looking at the total picture. I got to report to you how the whole thing is doing, just like if you have 100 stores, right? So you think I did good there?
I like it. Yes. Okay. That's the way to do it.
Yep. Okay. But yeah, that is something else. I mean, I'm not threatened by him. I don't think I think he's just an account manager anyway, because it's another RIA firm, and they're a big firm up in Dallas, and they just assigned him the account, you know, and he just is like the relationship manager. He's not the portfolio manager or anything. So I don't think there's any risk there. Okay. So, so obviously we're going to move forward. We got some good introductions set up. Oh, I had a good lunch too, by the way. It's a little harder, I think, with a 401 client, but some other 401 clients that I took on because they're a referral from some other clients of mine, and I wanted to help them. They're really sweet Christian people. They didn't meet our minimums. We took them on a couple years ago, and I told them, look, I can't give you 1242 service, and you're really below my minimum, but I want to help you, and so I'm going to take you on as a client. But I can only give you 401 service, you know.
Right.
One in-person meeting. And they're like, okay, great, cool. You know. So They gave me an in-person introduction over lunch to his sister, who would get 1242 service, who has money, and I think a significant amount. And she found out, she's been with Merrill, but she found out the other day that her Merrill advisor left or retired, but she hadn't heard from him, and she didn't even know he'd left. And so they've been bragging on me about how she ought to come see me. And so after the first of the year, we're going to get together in person, plus her three sons all do. And she said, would it be okay if my son came to the meeting with me? He has an account with them too. And also I like for him to sit in on the things that I'm doing since I'm a widow and things like that. So that'd be great. And then my client said, look, her other two sons would be good clients for you too. So that was a good introduction. And another good reason of some 401 clients, you know, can still introduce you and help you and be of value.
Yep. Yep. Just as long as you have time. It's a function of time.
Well, for now we do. I mean, we're not anywhere near the same. We talked a little bit about that. So.
All right. I got to jump. All right.
Have a Merry Christmas.
Thanks.
And a Happy New Year. See you next year. All right.
Bye-bye.
Hope you don't get too many lumps of coal in your stocking this year.
Try not to.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. See you soon.